tonight we have the opportunity of chatting with a young man who has won 6 Ironman titles in his career, has finished 2nd in Kona. Please give it up for Mr. Ben Hoffman. How you doing, Ben? Get your own microphone. Look at that.
Doing really well. Good to be here.
Great to see you, brother. It's been fun watching some of these photos. Look at that.
I know. I'm starting to believe I'm a pretty good athlete watching this on repeat up here. It's good memories.
I think you are. So talk a little bit about growing up and what sports you were into growing up.
Yeah, so zero background in triathlon, actually. I did ride a bike a lot as a kid. I still remember getting, you know, the training wheels off and being able to roll around the block and thinking it was quite the distance to ride around the block. And, you know, it was a lot of freedom back then. But in terms of sports that I played as a youth, definitely soccer was at the top of the list. Played a lot of basketball. And just telling Gino, actually, that I played a lot of golf in high school. So that was interesting to me. I was very serious about it. It became my final and only sport in my senior year in high school. It was the only sport I played. And I got down to about a 1.8 handicap. So I was really into it. And I don't make time for it anymore. But yeah, basketball, soccer, golf. I ran 2 seasons of high school track my freshman and sophomore year, where I was an 800 runner. So
out of high school, University of Montana, Missoula.
That's right.
And that's when you found the sport.
Exactly. So I did, one other thing I'll add really quickly, I did some cycle touring with my parents in high school. So I did have a little background in cycling and fortunately had a road bike, which, you know, can be a barrier to entry, especially when you're a poor college kid. So I had an old road bike that I converted to a triathlon bike. And although I'm sponsored by NV Composites now, I had some Rev X, some Spinergy Rev X's. So hearing about Spinergy was kind of cool. It took me back to my original triathlon days. But yes, started as a club team athlete at the University of Montana in Missoula. And that was 2003 when I started training with the team there.
Was Lindsay Corbin there at the time?
She was, yeah. We had quite the crew. For some reason, Missoula was kind of a hotbed for triathlon at the time. I always think it's kind of cool when you read these books like Malcolm Gladwell's, you know, talking about 10,000 hours of, and these people that become really great in their fields happen to be in these areas. Bill Gates is a great example where he was exposed to one of 2 places, I think, in the country that had a computer where he could learn to program at the time. It just happened that his high school had one of those, and, you know, one thing led to the other, IBM. And I happened to be in a place that had really good information about triathlon at the time. There was basically Boulder, Colorado with CU and their college team, and then Missoula had Team Stampede, which was our kind of older crew of age group athletes, and then we had really good coaching at the collegiate level. So I was exposed to some good stuff right off the bat and really loved it. Fell in love with the sport straight away.
Now, were you at that point during the summers, were you traveling around in a van and racing different triathlons around the U.S. and Canada?
That came
a little later.
Yep, 2006. So I graduated college 2006, and we called it the Summer of Glory. My coach at the time, I had a coach, Elliot Bassett, runs a company called Mountain Endurance, and he coached me for several years early in my professional career, and he and I, we actually got my parents' Suburban. We weren't, you know, we didn't have enough money to have our own vehicles, so we borrowed my parents' Suburban, threw in some tents, and went and camped and lived out of that. And we raced every weekend that we could for prize money. At the time, you could be an amateur athlete and go to Canada and win prize money. There wasn't any sort of professional requirement. So we went up there, and I won a few races, placed on a few others. I won Pacific Crest in Bend, Oregon that summer, and that was $1,000 for the win. I think I totaled just over $3,000 for that summer, and I was like, this is amazing. Like $3,300 in a summer? Like, definitely this is my career calling. Like, I'm going to be fine.
I can do this forever.
Exactly, man. And so, you know, fast forward one more year, 2007, I come out guns a-blazing, my first professional race, Wildflower. Long course, and the half Ironman there, I got 3rd place.
I remember that.
And that was a pretty good professional debut, far exceeded my expectations. It was also the elite long course national championship for USA Triathlon at the time. So in addition to the 3rd place prize money, I won another $1,500. And I was like, yes, we're a really smart move here.
This sport is special,
meanwhile,
man.
Meanwhile, my very supportive parents were probably still kind of like, what is this? You know, like, what are you doing? But yeah, I thought, okay, great. This is how they all go. Like, I'll just go and collect my money and, like, you know, go back and train and live this perfect life. And then I proceeded to get sixth place or so in every race after that, and, you know, occasionally eighth place and make no money. So the next 2 years were a little rough. But
and what were your parents thinking out of college? Here you are doing this rather than pursuing a real career.
Yeah, I think there was definitely some skepticism at the beginning. And yeah, it took a while before. I mean, I still remember this, you know, loving grandparents. I'm not going to paint a negative picture of my grandfather on my dad's side. But I remember when he was nearing his death, he lived a long life, 94 years, but kind of near the end, I visited him at one point in the hospital, and he said, well, when are you going to get a real job? And I was like, well, I kind of feel like this is a real job. And at that point, you know, I had some sponsors, and I felt like, you know, it was a little more justified. Maybe it wasn't so much playing around. But yeah, you know, it took several years to really get any traction. I mean, I definitely worked a part-time job and, you know, scraped it together on about $1,100 a month. And yeah, but I think that's also kind of the reason that you end up having success, is because you really appreciate it and you know what it takes to get there.
What were some of the special times when you're spending the summer basically driving around in a van, just racing, going from race to race, trying to figure out where to camp, where to eat? You know, that's got to be pretty fun stuff.
It really was. I mean, you know, I think I didn't anticipate getting into triathlon when I went to college. I really didn't know what college degree I wanted, anything like that. So this was just, you know, something that came on throughout the training and the racing that I did in college. And, you know, I didn't, when I got to the end of my college career, I kind of, you know, it was pretty cool. I had some friends in Montana, these people that I knew. They owned an art gallery there. They went on a big trip to China to go look for art or something. And they said, here, take the keys to our house, look after our two black labs. And they had this piece of property that was up in the mountains of Montana. It was just becoming wintertime. It was November. And they said, take care of the dogs. You know, it would bordered Forest Service land. So not only were they on their own 35 acres, but then it was wilderness. So, I mean, I was out there alone, and I just kind of had this time to reflect and be like, what do I want to do now? And I realized that, like, what I wanted to do was continue pursuing triathlon and see how good I could be. And so it was a perfect little moment, like a little bit of respite there to, you know, really think about what I wanted and reflect. And yeah, I realized how much, you know, how important it was to me, how much I love the lifestyle, the discipline of it, the travel, the community. And yeah, and then I went to Colorado and started pursuing it more, you know, vigorously. And one thing led to another. Now I'm here.
So did you talk to other pros? You do some research and figure out, okay, can you really make a living at this? When did it hit you that, okay, someone really can make a living at this? Or are you still waiting for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I'm fortunate to have great support. And, you know, again, it didn't come easy. No. But, you know, I think I just wasn't ultra concerned about that initially. I will never lie and say that it wasn't on my radar, that it wasn't important to me, but it, at least at the beginning, I think my reasons for why I was doing this were way different than that. They were just that I wanted the personal challenge. I just wanted to see how good I could be. I am intensely competitive, so that was important to me too, to kind of prove myself on that race stage. But you know, I guess when I really started looking into the financial side and paying closer attention, that was probably maybe 2009 and 10, where I was getting to that point where I was like, okay, I'm a little bit older now. Eventually I would like to maybe own a home and, like, you know, be able to pay my electric bill and, you know, things like that. So yeah, I think that was probably the time for me, which was at that point 2 or 3 years into my pro career. And I think that's a lot of times you see with pros, that's kind of that make or break point where, you know, for certain people at least, that's where they start to question a little bit, like, can I really continue to do this? And the funny thing is about those situations is I feel like that's the precipice, right? Like, you kind of get to that point and it's either do or die. And oftentimes if you continue just a little bit further, you get that breakthrough. And for me, that was 2010.
Did you have the feeling when you were starting to heading over to Kona for the first time, right? And I look at your history in Kona, and you went 102nd, 53rd, DNF, but then 15th, right? So after you go over to Kona, and that's where everybody, if people talk about the heat and wind in Kona, it's really the competition that makes that thing so special, because everybody is there and everybody thinks they can do well. When you go there and get 102nd, what did you learn about yourself through that?
I mean, the truth is I remember that fall really well. And the tough thing about Kona is that, I mean, for the triathlon world, so much hinges on it. You know, I mean, it's what makes it great. And also it makes it tough, because if you don't have a great Kona, you enter into your off season for at least North America, and you have a lot of time to kind of reflect on your performance. If it goes well, that can be a great winter. If it doesn't go well, it can be a little bit dark. And I mean, that's how it was for me. And I remember that my first Kona, I had quit my part-time job working at a health department. And I was like, I'm going all in. I went to Kona. I trained for 6 weeks out there. I was like, I'm sure I'm going top 10. And I got 102nd. And so then for me, I was like, well, what did I just do? I quit my part-time job. I had this decent setup where I was getting better gradually, but I went all in, and my first result was basically getting my butt kicked. And, you know, it was tough. I had to regroup and really ask myself the hard questions again and decide if I wanted to continue. And really, you know, fortunately, I remember the relief of it in May of the following year, which was 2010. I got second place at Ironman St. George, the full distance. And I was like, okay, whew, like, I'm back, you know? Like, I'm not terrible, which is how I felt after Kona. But, you know, it's a different thing. And I feel like for most people, you have to learn. You really have to get your, you know, have to take your licks out there before you can move forward.
So as you're, when you show that great improvement, when you go from, you know, 53rd DNF, 15th, and then second, so the jump to 15th obviously is a huge one. What was the difference? Was it just training? Was it mental? What was the difference?
Well, two things, definitely. One was that, not listed in your results there, after the DNF, I took a year off of Kona. I qualified twice in that year because I don't know how it worked at the time. It was a slot-based system, but in 2012, I won two Ironmans. I won St. George, and then I also won Wisconsin in September. And I decided to turn down my Kona spot both times because I thought, I've done Kona three times now. It hasn't gone well any of those times. I need to take a step back and watch the race and see how this unfolds, see what goes on out there, see what I'm missing. So I flew out to Kona in October after winning Wisconsin and just watched the race.
And did you watch it from the course? What'd you do?
Yeah, I did. I watched it from the course. I got out there on my bike. I did everything I could to take it in. And then when I wasn't obviously on the course, like able to follow it exactly, which is tough out there, I just watched every minute of it on TV and got as much coverage as I could that way. And I just think it gave me perspective, and, you know, it was able to just kind of watch how it unfolded and just realize that if you can do a smart, strong race and kind of, you know, get your head around it, not definitely buy into all the hype that's out there, you can have a good performance. I mean, there wasn't any reason on paper that I couldn't do it out there. I think it was more in my head.
So, and then when you do finish 15th, was that the following year after watching?
It was.
So the following year, you get 15th. So now you're sort of smelling it a little bit.
That's
and
it.
What was it about that day that was different?
When I got 15th?
Yeah.
So when I got 15th, I was really proud of that race because it was a big breakthrough for me. I didn't have a total blow up. I went from, you know, having really poor marathon performances to having what I thought was a pretty solid day and representative of what I was capable of on that day. I feel like I got the best out of myself. And I've talked to a lot of pros that have gotten 15th place. Usually I know the person that gets 15th, and I always say to them, I'm like, I know what that feels like. Like, you gave everything to get 15th, and people don't talk about 15th. They're not going to run an ad of you in a magazine because you got 15th, but it's a good performance on that stage.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, I definitely, you know, it gave me a lot of confidence, and it just sort of solidified the things that I had done on that day and made me repeat those again the following year.
So in 2014, did you feel that, okay, I took 15th last year, I'm in a hunt, and we've seen that a lot, where people go from 11th or 12th, and all of a sudden they're top five. They make a huge leap because now that confidence is there.
Right.
Because it's usually someone makes a move somewhere, and you miss that move, and all of a sudden you're 8 or 10 spaces back. What was different the year that you got second?
I mean, I think that for sure the confidence was high, like you just touched on, and that's a big piece of it, is that self-belief. And I think of racing as that, really, where the things that you do, whether it's in training or racing, are just steps towards more and more self-belief. And really, you know, your mind is the key to this. I mean, a lot of the professionals, you look at us, we do similar training, we have similar body compositions, But really, it's upstairs what drives, you know, your performance on the day. So definitely having that self-belief, that confidence was huge. And I think the other thing too, when I look back on 2014, I remember stepping off the airplane there and just being so excited to be there. And I think sometimes, you know, what happens is it's later in the year, you've raced all year. There's so much hype, like I said, there's a lot of pressure on you both internally and externally. And you get there and you get distracted by all that and you forget that, hey, we have an opportunity. Like we have this chance to race on this stage against the best guys in the world and see what we can do on this day. And that time and the other times that I perform well out there, I stepped off the plane being like, I am so fired up to be here and just see what I can do. And I am aware of the opportunity and I'm ready to attack the course. I believe I can do this. And I didn't get distracted by the other stuff that's going on out there or let the self-doubt creep in. So I would say those are kind of the two main things probably that were different that year.
What impressed me that year is a lot of times if somebody's racing the marathon, when somebody gets passed, they're gone, right? People don't usually come back. But I think there was a point in that marathon where, I think it was Freddie Van Leerd, who was defending champion.
That's right.
Freddie Van Leerd passed you, and I'm like, okay, Ben's going to start going backwards. And then you immediately just got right back and went right by him. And that was, I mean, that's a hard thing to do. This guy's the defending champion. You're a guy who's been 15th, and you had the guts to basically say, no, that was last year, this is this year, and I'm going by you.
That's it, yeah. I mean, and racing is beautiful that way. You know, you can't script it. That's why we all show up and get out there and see what happens on the day, because it's not, the medals aren't handed out beforehand. But, you know, that's what it's all about too, is getting out there and just challenging yourself on the day and seeing in that moment. You know, that's why I love racing. It's so honest. It's kind of like asking yourself when it comes down to it, do you have it? And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. But like it's kind of addicting. It's almost like a drug that way where, you know, you're going to get that honest feedback on the day. And I love coming up against that challenge and just seeing if I have it.
So you end up second that day to Sebastian Kienle. Yep. And obviously you guys become really good buddies since then. How did that race change your life, or did it?
It definitely did. I think, again, Kona is the bellwether for our sport. It's what we all focus on. It's the Holy Grail. So when you perform there, not only do your own expectations of your performance change, but also everyone around you. And I think, you know, it can be both good and bad. I mean, there's no question that it helped me from a sponsorship standpoint. And of course, that's a big part of the pursuit for us, you know, that this is our livelihood and how we make our living. So it definitely changed that for me. But it also changed the way that I approached that race, because then it was like, well, I've been second, what's left? Winning. And, you know, it starts to feel like maybe the performances that you do out there that are any less than second place aren't good anymore, or aren't enough. So that part of it, you know, is something that you still will always battle with until you win it potentially. And even then, I'm not sure. You know, I ask myself that all the time. Will it really change me? I don't know. But, you know, I'm certainly going to try to win because I want to. I want to see if I can.
Well, and also, we haven't had an American win it since Tim DeBoom back in 2001, 2002. So it's been a long drought for the American men.
Need to bring it home again.
Exactly. Yeah. We'd like to see Benny bring it home for us. That'd be great. You've had really good success at Ironman South Africa.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that event. The other thing is, here's Ironman St. George, probably one of the more brutal races around, and you win that, right? And that goes away. That's always a bummer when you have a race that you're really, imagine if Kona had gone away, Dave Scott would be going, what do I do now? So South Africa obviously is a tough course as well. What is it about that race that suits your style so well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely I love the challenging courses. I mean, you touched on that. Lake Placid was my first Ironman win, 2010, also a challenging course. Coeur d'Alene,
yep.
Another challenging race. Unfortunately, not around anymore. But the one positive about winning the race on the last year is that you're kind of the perpetual defending champion, so you can hang your hat on that.
That is a good point. Yeah.
So
you are the defending champion.
So there are some
forever.
Silver linings, but I mean, I prefer the really tough, honest courses. I don't like, you know, the big bunch rides with the groups, and I prefer when the race gets settled out, especially on the bike course. If it can be challenging there, I love that. And then, I'm a strength athlete. You know, I wouldn't say I lack all elements of finesse, but you know, I'm more of a strength athlete. And you know, I'm not the most beautiful runner or something like that. I'm capable of running plenty fast, but maybe I don't look the best doing it. So, you know, I think those strength courses where it really comes down to the tough man suit me well. And South Africa seems to be that kind of race. The pavement is a little bit rough. There's definitely some wind, some hills on the bike. And then the other thing that I really love about South Africa is the way the community gets behind it. It's the same way I feel about Wisconsin. The community really wants you there and they really support the race. I mean, I'm talking about people who come out a week ahead of the race and they stake out their spot for, you know, put up their tent on race day to get out there and barbecue and drink beer and cheer you on. And they're just really into it. And it, you know, they feel this way about sport in general. And they just really respect what people are doing, the training that they put in. And then of course the performances that they do on race day. So having that kind of support from the crowd is really huge. You feel welcome there and you feel really supported all day. So it's a special place. I'm hoping to go back and get a little redemption from last year. I didn't have my best performance there after racing Cape Epic. I ended up injured and walked the marathon at Ironman South Africa. But, you know, I think things are on track for another strong performance this year.
Let's just talk a little about that. Last year, how many people know what Cape Epic is? Cape Epic is this classic mountain bike, multiple day stage race in South Africa that is brutal.
Yes.
And you and Sebastian Kienle went as part of the Ironman Foundation to race down there.
That's right.
What did you know about Cape Epic before you went, and what did you find out about it?
Obviously, I didn't know enough. No, I mean, as you mentioned, we were presented with this opportunity, or initially I was presented with this opportunity to race for the Ironman Foundation, and I thought, this is a cool chance to do a little bit of giving back, and I'm actually an ambassador for Ironman Foundation this year. I think it's a way that I can give back currently with my very self-involved lifestyle of racing professionally. I would love to give back more in the future, and I plan to, but the truth of the matter is I only have a certain amount of mental and physical energy every day, and I dedicate most of it to training and recovery. So anyway, we were offered this opportunity to race this race, and I knew a little bit about it simply because I had South African friends, and they always said, oh, it's like the Comrades Marathon. These guys are crazy. They do all this stuff. And I'm like, I do Ironman. Like, this can't be that hard, you know? And I said, sure, I'll do it. And I said, under one condition, that I can like pick my teammate, and I have a teammate in mind. It's Sebastian. I would love to see if he wants to do it. If he does, I'll do it with him. I reached out to him, and he was like, let's do it. I was like, okay. And, you know, we signed up, got after the training. And I think, again, I was really naive. I just didn't know that much about it. And I learned quickly.
How brutal? Quickly. How brutal is that thing?
Very, very hard. And on top of that, we both fell ill before the race. It was a stomach bug thing going around the Cape Town area. So we started on our back foot a little bit, and it just kind of, it was really a bit like a living nightmare. I mean, I can't describe it any other way.
How many days is it?
It's 8 days.
And you're sick going into it.
Yeah. And then of course, with this kind of, you know, issue we're dealing with, you really don't want to be eating a lot of sugar, but you need to fuel yourself when you're racing. So it just kind of, you keep feeding the beast. And like, I just couldn't get over it. And even took me a week after the race to really come around from it. So to spare you the details, it was not pretty on the, you know, on the health front. And then we both suffered crashes, which is an everyday reality there. It's just, you know, not the most challenging terrain all the time, but a lot of loose, gravelly kind of surfaces where you can wash out really easy, very hot temperatures. You're just exhausted. I mean, you're just beat down. And the thing is, I tell people, on top of the physical, you know, aspect being drained physically, you also get off the bike. And for us as athletes, our bodies, you know, our temples, our jobs, and you want to take the best care you can of them, and you're super afraid of crashing. So even when you get off the bike every day and you've completed another stage, you're not really relaxed. You go home and you're just thinking, what's going to happen tomorrow? Am I going to crash? Am I going to break my arm? Like, you know, like, it's kind of crazy. You just never really get off your guard until you're finally crossed the line on the last day. And I think that cumulative mental and physical fatigue just really wore me down. And yeah, if you want a big challenge, sign up for Cape Epic.
How many miles a day?
Anywhere from 50 to 70 miles, but the climbing is crazy. I mean, it's like up and down the entire time. So it's on a mountain bike, 50 to 70 miles is a lot. And it, you know, it's the other thing too, by the end of it,
Sebby
and I, we were just trying everything we could do to hold the bars differently. I mean, right here it was so sore. Our triceps were super sore. It was just like all these areas of your body that you wouldn't normally be sore in were just, you know, terribly sore. So yeah, it was quite the experience.
I'm guessing that the pro mountain bikers over there were really excited to have you there to be able to slam some triathletes.
Yeah, I think so, probably. Unfortunately, the way that race is set up, we were not able to race with them. So they would leave 5 minutes in front of us every day. We would leave with the A group and chase them, and we would never bridge. So we would catch the guys that were stragglers, that had a flat, whatever, the people that weren't as strong. And we actually ended up finishing 25th out of about, there were 50 pro teams, and we were 25th overall. So we finished within kind of that middle range of the pros. We actually had a really respectable performance. And I think a lot of the pro mountain bikers actually walked away kind of like, you know, tipping their cap to us a little bit. So that was good that we kind of did that. But yeah, for the top guys, I'm sure they were kind of chuckling a little bit, like, yeah, this is what this is about. Like,
welcome, boys. Yeah, this is exactly. Real. Forget that iron stuff. This is real racing.
Yep.
And like you said, you were sick afterwards too, right?
Yeah. So I carried that for a little bit afterwards, and it took a while to bounce back. And then I didn't feel this so much. I crashed on the Queen stage the fourth day, and I landed really heavy on my right side, and I felt this weird electrical kind of jolt in my low left back, and I was like, oh, that was weird. I've never felt that before. Continued riding, you know, pedaled it out, and then had four more days of riding my bike super hard, and it didn't feel good. My low back felt really tight, and you know, but it was manageable, and I was only riding my bike. We started this race thinking, oh yeah, we'll do some swims and runs, and we did one swim and one run in like the first 2 days, and it was like, nope, no way, this is over. Like, just ride the bike and try to survive. And anyway, I got back to running shortly after that period, after I got healthy, and I had 3 weeks between the two races. And I did a few runs, they went okay, but it didn't feel quite right. And then I did a track set, and I just locked up, and everything was totally tight, and like my SI joint was out, and I was just like, oh man, this is not good. And I just, for the rest of that 2 weeks, I tried to recover, and I just couldn't get it together. And every time I tried to do a run, I couldn't run. So I went into Ironman South Africa, kind of fingers crossed, like hoping for a miracle in the day. But even when I ran into the water to start the swim, I was like, you know, limping. So yeah, unfortunately, that was kind of, you know, the price I paid for doing Cape Epic. It was to not really have the Ironman performance I wanted there. But you live and you learn.
That Ironman performance, having to walk the run when you're defending champion, right? That's got to be so hard for you.
It was really challenging on a lot of levels. I mean, I have never finished an Ironman in the dark and hope to never do that again.
Welcome to chicken soup and light stick. Nice.
But I was blown away by the people on the course once again, who were both thanking me for continuing on and finishing the race, and just totally supportive. Like tons of conversations with age group athletes who are out there, you know, walking and going through their own battles, and it was really good for me in a lot of ways. And I think mentally too, I mean, we push ourselves really hard, but I didn't realize the luxury of finishing an Ironman in like 8 hours. When you're out there for 12 hours, it's like really hard. I mean, it's crazy. So, yeah.
There we go. There's our soundbite. When you finish Ironman in 12 hours, it's really hard.
But I will say this as a kind of a final point on that. I remember the crystallizing moment for me that kept me from quitting too, was I just kind of thought about it, and I was like, you know, what am I really going to do? I'm going to go back to my hotel room, and I'm going to sit on the bed, and I'm going to feel bad for myself because I was injured and couldn't do the race I wanted. I was like, time is going to pass at exactly the same speed if I'm laying on my hotel bed or if I'm like trundling my way through this right now. And I was like, so I'm going to keep going.
You were, yeah, love that. You get a lot of street cred from all of us, because a lot of guys would just pull the plug and go, well, there's another race out there. Because the thing you beat yourself up on is even walking a marathon is still 26 miles. It's hard stuff.
It's a long way, yeah.
It's a long way, right?
Yeah.
Did you validate for Kona or anything?
I did, yeah. So okay. that component was a part of it as well. And I was not sure. I wasn't sure what I was dealing with as far as an injury, how long that would take to recover, then getting fit again to do another Ironman, you know. And I just said, well, I need to finish this too for that reason and kind of do a hard reset, get healthy, and then get ready for Kona, which was the plan. So.
And when did you pull the plug on Kona?
About 3 weeks before this past year. What I believe, as far as we can tell, to be completely unrelated to my crash in Cape Epic, I suffered a sacral stress fracture, which, yeah, caught me completely, you know, by surprise, of course. I was training really well, came off a second place finish at Ironman 70.3 Santa Cruz.
Yep.
And then later that week, on that Friday, I believe it was, or maybe Saturday on the weekend, I did a brick workout, and I remember I was kind of like trying to run on the side of the path. Like I was like trying to find the gravel because I was like, this doesn't feel right, you know? And then kind of limped my way home, ate some food, and I was like trying to get up out of the chair, and I was like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm really hurt. And yeah. And we thought it was just a, you know, piriformis thing or something like that. It was trying to treat it as soft tissue. And then after about another week of that, I got an MRI, and it was very clear that I had, you know, a lot of edema and a fracture line through it. So yeah, grade 4 sacral stress fracture. Even when I found that out, I still tried to train for another like 3 or 4 days.
I can do it.
I was like, I'll just not run and then run in Kona. And my doctor was like, look, if you were a high school cross country runner, I'd be like, shut it down. You know, he's like, but this is your job. And he's like, your body will tell you. He's like, you probably, you know, can't make it a whole lot worse. And he's like, but I will tell you, he's like, you're probably going to come to a point out there where you're just going to be in so much pain, it's going to be really hard to keep going. And I actually got to that point 4 days later in training, and I was like, this is insane. Like, I know what pain is like, a lot of pain. And this was like really, really painful. And I couldn't imagine doing any kind of decent performance. So I just decided the best thing was to shut it down and try to recover.
What are the plans for this year?
So I actually am leaving from here tomorrow morning to fly to Mexico for a race, which will be my season opener.
Campeche.
Yeah, 70.3. And that'll be...
You've been there before, right?
I have not been to that one.
No.
I've been to Monterey before.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yep. And yeah, I'm looking forward to being back there. I think it should be a challenging race. It's going to be a noon start. And it's quite hot down there right now. It's in the 90s with 80% humidity, I think. So it's going to be...
So why not start at noon? That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good Kona test early season, yeah. But following that, I will head back to Ironman South Africa for a little redemption, so that should be a good one, too.
That's April 7th.
April 7th, yeah. A red-hot field is going to be really a good test.
And the goal is to get back to Kona this year?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, once again, I think for the rest of my career, when I'm racing at a high level, I'm definitely going to target Kona. And yeah, I'd love to have some more strong performances out there. A win, of course, would be ideal.
So a couple years ago, I heard that you were training with Ryan Bolton, who was actually on our first ever Olympic team in 2000.
That's right. He raced in Sydney. Yeah,
he did. He's a coach, and he coaches the Harambe. Isn't that Harambe Project?
Yeah.
And Caroline Rotich, who won Boston Marathon. I mean, you're running with some real runners there.
That's it. Yeah.
How has that helped?
It definitely has helped a lot. I mean, it's just kind of changed my perspective on the top end speed, especially. I mean, running with real runners, you learn that their default paces that aerobic jogging paces are, you know, kind of like our marathon race pace for Ironman. And I think that's a lot of what this is about, is just kind of shifting perspective, right? It's like that self-belief thing where a lot of training is just teaching your body to kind of, you know, deal with faster and stronger and better, and what then is, of course, you know, used to be really fast for you just becomes kind of more of a default pace. And especially over Ironman, I mean, becoming comfortable, more and more comfortable, especially on the marathon at those faster paces, you know, that's kind of the key to it. So running with runners has certainly opened my eyes to that. And yeah, it's definitely shifted my perspective. I'm looking forward to putting a little bit more of that really good training that we've done on display, you know, at South Africa and then again in Kona.
I remember when I was talking to Ryan 2 years ago in Kona, and he was like, you watch Ben. He's running really, really well. And I know we didn't see the fruits of that, right, there. But we were talking earlier, that's sometimes cumulative, right? Yeah. It takes a little while for that stuff to click in.
I saw somewhere randomly on social media, maybe it was Twitter or something the other day, and I don't even remember who posted it, but it was kind of a comment, and it might have even been from a totally different sport, but somebody had made the comment that, you know, don't get down on yourself when you don't have the race performance you wanted. It doesn't mean that the training you did wasn't real or that it's gone or something like that. You know, eventually this work that you've done will show itself if you continue to persevere and get yourself out there and lay it on the line. So, yeah, I mean, my race when I was ninth that year, you talked to Ryan, you know, I laid it all on the line on the bike and I definitely overbiked and underfueled a little bit and I paid the price on the run. I didn't have the run that I think I had trained that year, but that's racing. Again, you know, you take the risk at our level, you go for the win, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you've got to give yourself a chance if you want to win.
So when you do a race like South Africa, where you ended up having to walk the marathon and being out there 12 hours, how did that change your perception of age group athletes and what the age group athlete goes through on a daily basis just to get to the starting line, balancing family and everything else?
I mean, total respect. I mean, I think I already had some level of that and understanding, but it certainly did help drive that home for me that what you guys do, I mean, you know, somebody, I was talking to somebody, I'm down here partially to connect with my sponsor, Zoot Sports, and they have a camp going on right now with their team members. And one of the guys was talking to me, he's like, I see your guys' numbers and I just can't understand your heart rates and your power numbers are so high. And I was like, hey man, this is our job. Like, this is what we do. We better be good at this. You know, like, we spend all day training and then recovering. But to see age group athletes who put up these performances and even just finish these things while balancing all the other things in their lives, I mean, I'm in awe, and I think, you know, hats off to all of you who managed to balance it all, because I'm not sure I could actually if I had, you know, another job and, you know, multiple kids and whatever other life stressors and things to balance. So congrats.
How about a round of applause for Mr. Ben Hoffman?